Hey, girlfriends, welcome to another episode of Girlfriends and Goals. We're your hosts, Miosha
and Samaria.
This podcast is a space where we'll talk about friendships, life goals, a little bit of pop culture, and all things womanhood.
On today's episode, we have a special guest who's going to talk about her experience with living with her mother-in-law for the entirety of her marriage. So we definitely have a good episode in store. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. All right. So just to go ahead and introduce our guest today, our guest is Miriam. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah, we're so happy to have you. And we'll have you like tell us a little bit more about yourself, obviously, as the episode goes on. But we just want to give you a warm welcome before we get into our first segment.
Thank you.
Of course. All right, so we'll start today's episode with the girlfriend check-in segment, and that's where we pull a question from, honestly, anywhere now. We used to pull it from We're Not Really Strangers, the Conversation Starter Game, or the Burn After Writing book, but now we just pick questions that interest us from anywhere. So since this episode is coming out at the beginning-ish of the year, this question is, what makes you proud? And what makes you cringe when you think back on the last year? So Miriam, since you're our special guest, we're going to start with you and get your answer.
Okay, so I think obviously it's really easy to say what makes you proud. So what makes me proud would be finally finishing my MBA. I started it back in, I don't know, way back. I started and then I gave up. And then anyway, this year I finished and I graduated and then really hit a really smooth sailing ground with a business that my brother and I run that we started back during the pandemic and really saw some huge, huge gains with that. So that is what I'm really proud of, all while being a mom to two very active kids and still keeping the house alive without there being a fire. So our house is still standing while wearing lots of hats. That's what I'm most proud of. When I think about what makes me cringe, I would say, I think it's more like a me thing. I'm always like really self-critical of myself. So I would say the amount of times, this is a safe space. The amount of times I probably have lost my cool with my children, which, you know, I'm sure every mom probably goes into the year saying I'm not going to be a screaming mom. but I'm really working on trying not to be that. And I would say this year, every morning I probably woke up saying today's the day that I'm not going to scream, and I lost the battle a little too often. And so, yes, it's a resolution. Grace-based parenting is going to be my resolution. Of course, I probably had a lot on my plate, but it's going to be a little bit more reduced because I'm going to be intentional about that. But I shouldn't take that out on my kids. And so, yes, that makes me cringe.
Yeah, this is definitely a safe space. And that's very relatable. I think we all kind of have these ideas of what our parenting or mothering is going to look like. But it's so different when you're in it. Yeah. Like we are like, oh, I'm not going to be that kind of parent, or I'm not going to have my kid have too much screen time as they're glued to the iPad.
I know.
I will say though, as an aunt, I feel like kids sometimes just make you want to fight. Like I remember one time my niece was over and I had just moved into my house at that time, and she locked like the doors for all the rooms. And I was just like, why would you lock us out of the rooms? And then she goes and grabs like a penny and she's like, well, I can open it. See? And I'm like, girl, you did not have to do all that just to show me you could open it. Like, you could at least left one room door open.
Yes, they're always pushing some kind of button, especially my 4-year-old who now speaks complete sentences full of sarcasm.
That's a sign of intelligence, I think. I've heard that somewhere.
It could be a sign of intelligence or manipulation. Yeah. It's borderline.
Miosha, do you want to go next? Something that you're proud of and something that makes you cringe?
I guess I'll start with something that makes me cringe. So back before the pandemic, I made a big cross-country move. And during that time, I was pregnant. So we packed up, we moved into a space that was a little bit smaller than what we had before. Fast forward a year, I transitioned to my next house, which was bigger. At that point, my child was here. And, you know, we unpacked the house for the most part. What makes me cringe is that, y'all, why a year later in my new house or the house I'm in now, I still got moving boxes that ain't been unpacked since my big cross-country move. Now, I will say, though, that the stuff that I haven't unpacked isn't stuff that I would use, obviously, because I ain't touched it. Right. How long. So my reasoning with the first like big move was that we're in a smaller space. So a lot of it was just put kind of in storage in the garage area because I didn't have anywhere to put it.
Yeah.
But with this house, I don't know. It's weird because I feel like I'm very organized. Samaria knows this, like I need my space to be cleaned and organized, but for whatever reason with these boxes, it just feels like it's going to take it all out of me, like unpack them, declutter. And the majority of it is home decor, clothes. And so, yeah, I am cringing at the fact that I would say I have about 5 to 7 boxes that I've been looking at. I will say they're in a closet, so that also helps that it's kind of out of sight.
It's tucked away. You don't have to see it.
It's tucked away, but it's so cringy because I literally declutter almost every weekend, whether it's my kids' room or just any area. I'm always going through and being like, oh, I need to take this to Goodwill, donate this, get rid of that. But with these boxes, listen, this episode is coming out the beginning of 2023, and my prayer is that these boxes don't make it into the new year with me.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Oh man, that's funny. Okay, so I don't know if it's as cringe as yours, but also, is it as cringe, which I hear like the young kids say, or is it still like cringe worthy? Like when I was coming up, it was always cringe worthy, not cringe, but yeah, now it's different. So I have a screensaver that I take a lot of time selecting for the beginning of each year. And last year's screensaver was "The secret of your future is hidden in your daily routine." So I picked that so that I would have a really good day-to-day routine. You know, like I feel like I strive to be robotic. I know I'll never get there, but I want to be robotic. Like I want to wake up and be like clockwork, you know, this hour, this hour, that. So finally, I got into a groove at the end of the year, like maybe end of October-ish. But for the most part of the year, I would look at this screensaver and be like, oh, I guess it's not happening this year for like 10 months. And I don't even know, I say like I got it together towards the end of the year, but it's still not robotic. It's still not giving what I thought it would give. So I might just carry this on over to the new year with me and see how well I do this year with it. But yeah, that's just, every time I look at my phone, I'm just like, ah, you really thought you were gonna do it. And I did not, so.
Thought you was about to do it big. That is so interesting because in my head, you're very robotic. I mean, you're one of the most productive people I know. So to hear that you feel like you're not robotic, I'm like, well, how do you get it all done?
Other people say this and I'm like, y'all don't get it. Like, I need to be more robotic. Like, I need to turn into a machine where I can like plug me up and do tasks. Like, that's what I want, honestly. But yeah, so that's it for my cringe. I guess we'll go ahead and get into the episode. Cool. So you guys already know what the topic is for today. So let's just hop right in. And Miriam, we'll start with you just telling us a little bit about yourself and like roughly how long you've been married, how many, I think you said already that you have two children, but yeah, just a little bit about your home life before we get into like the nitty gritty.
Yeah. So I have been married for just around 8 years. And I have two kids and my mother-in-law has been with us. I want to say, about 8 months into our marriage is when, my mother-in-law came to reside with us, and that's when the party started. We started off as a party of two and then became a party of three before welcoming our first child. And so it's been us ever since then.
Okay. So, you know, you mentioned that this happened pretty early on, but before marriage. So did you have any thoughts around living with your in-laws? And was this something that you all discussed before his mom moved in?
So we never discussed in-law living situations because we both didn't have an expectation that either of our parents would live with us. When we got married, we were both very young. Well, I mean, not really young, but, you know, like seemingly young where we weren't of the age that you needed, you know, your parents to come live with you. And, you know, my parents lived here. And at the time, his mom, you know, lived out of the country and, you know, she had her living situation there. And so there really wasn't an expectation that anyone was going to live with us. So we never really discussed it or talked about it. It was just kind of like, it's just going to be us. Like, it really never crossed our minds, honestly, that any parent would have to live with us on either side. We didn't think about it. And then it didn't occur to us that we would, you know, have to have a parent living with us until later on in our marriage.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I do have a follow-up question. So I guess in the time leading up to before she moved in, was there a conversation then? So it was about 8 months into your marriage, but the time between, oh, she's going to come live with us and she's here, was there any thoughts during that time?
So yes, but here's the catchphrase. my mother-in-law initially, so when we got married, we ended up having our first child, or not having our first child, we were expecting, I think 2 months into the marriage, and we, you know, we're gonna end up having our child in July. And so typical, you know, African culture is, you know, you have an in-law come and stay with you. My mother at the time was not in a place to be able to come and do the whole stay with you, take care of the baby. So we did discuss that my mother-in-law would come to visit for a time period and stay with us to help take care of the baby so that the baby wouldn't have to go back to daycare so soon. And that way I could, you know, transition back into work before she would go back to living in her country. And so that was how it initially happened, of, you know, my mother-in-law coming to reside with us. But it all started as a visit. Some life situations happened in the process of that. Some family situations happened and occurred. And so the initial time frame was that my mother-in-law was just really going to come and stay for about 6 months. And then once the baby was, you know, 6 months was a good age for the baby to now start daycare, it would be perfect. The immune system isn't that strong, but at least, you know, you're at a healthy age for the baby to go back to daycare and, you know, it would all be fine, seemingly by American standards, you know, back to work and whatnot. But, you know, like I said, some, you know, life situations happened and occurred. We had some issues, unfortunate issues happen in the family that resulted in my mother-in-law having to stay with us. What at the time seemed like it was going to be temporary, because communication for all of us probably wasn't as clear between all three. And when I say all of us, I say myself, my husband, and my mother-in-law. It was not very clear how we ended up in a permanent living situation. So, yeah.
And that, I think that's understandable, especially for a young marriage. Like, I don't know, maybe emphasis is on communicating with each other. And so that's like a, like an additional, you know, thing that's thrown into the mix of that. So I can definitely understand that.
Yeah. And I was just going to add, as well as you just being young in your marriage and age-wise, you're just not probably thinking that this is something that you'd have to tackle so soon. I think most of us know, like, oh, that time will come, but maybe that, I don't know, like permanent living situation with in-laws is 15, 20 years in as maybe our parents age.
Right.
So we got time to get to that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So how would you describe your relationship with your mother-in-law prior to her moving in? So even under the guise of this is temporary, coming to stay with the baby mostly, how would you describe your relationship? And if you want to rate it, one is like, oh, we never really talk unless we absolutely have to. And five is like, oh, that's my good girlfriend.
I would say we were a 7 to an 8. Again, it was still so fresh. We were just getting to know each other. Again, my mother-in-law lived in a whole nother country. Yeah. Once we got married, you know, and after the wedding, she went back. We would have phone conversations. Hi, how are you? I'm a really introverted person in general too. So that also makes it a little bit hard for me to just kind of like naturally navigate in conversations. I would say then it was a lot harder. I'm getting way better now at being able to navigate conversations a lot easier, especially like if I don't know the person. And so I think it was harder for me to navigate those let's get to know you kind of conversations with my mother-in-law. And we have, you know, kind of very different personalities, where very friendly, she loved conversations, love to, you know, just your typical, you know, elderly, you know, like, let's sit down and chit chat. And I'm just kind of, you know, like more quiet and reserved, like,
let's not
like, let's read a book. No, it's just but it's just that was the difference. But I would still say it was still in the get to know you phase. And then on top of that, everything will always be very happy when you now throw in a new baby into the equation, where there forces some form of reliance on, at least for me, I felt like I had to be a little bit more reliant on my mother-in-law, because I didn't have an easy childbirth experience towards the end. And then my labor experience was pretty traumatic. And so when I came home, there wasn't a lot that I could do for myself. So it really forced me to just kind of be reliant on my mother-in-law, which in a certain way was good, but not so good, because then at that point, it was like she was kind of, you know, setting her own boundaries, because I was not as mobile and I wasn't really able to take care of my baby as well. And so a lot of things that you might do as a first time mother, I didn't really do. It was really my mother-in-law that was, you know, really doing those things. So those were kind of like the dynamics of the situation. I would say that we were still in that get to know you phase. You don't want to offend the other person. So even if something does bother you, I wouldn't say anything. And even I'm sure if I did something that may have bothered her, I'm sure she probably didn't say anything either, because it's still very fresh. And it's like, okay, we're still getting, this is my son's daughter, or, you know, this is my husband's mom. I don't want to, you know, not, it's not like you're walking on eggshells, but you just want to be gentle about a new relationship, knowing the fact that, you know, you're still getting to know each other. So I would say in the very beginning, it was fresh. It was seemingly roses, I would say. Like, I would give it an 8. We really, I wouldn't say that we have like a deep connection, because we were still getting to know each other, but there really weren't much issues. And again, it was under the, you know, kind of the pretense that this was temporary. This wasn't going to be a permanent living situation again.
Got you. So I'm going to skip ahead, because that kind of gets into like, okay, was there a difference in the relationship before kids and after kids? But with the setting of boundaries, do you feel like, and you said like reliance and you said boundaries. So I'm trying to figure out, was it a situation where, you know, she was kind of setting the pace, like, oh, okay, this time is this, like she was setting the structure, I guess, for, or the schedule for the household or the family or the baby?
I wouldn't say necessarily for, there were a lot of things, yes, because the baby was in her care. Yeah. So yes, a lot of things were done her way. And because we're two different generations, I don't necessarily, and I wouldn't necessarily back then agree with some of the things. And so, yeah, naturally we would, you know, very, in a very cordial manner, we would bump heads on, no, I prefer not to do it that way. And, you know, it would, she may not understand why I would not want to do that way. And again, you know, cultural differences, it's kind of like, excuse me, ma, but you still have to be, you're still walking that politeness of, you know, African culture of, you know, like, I gotta still respect you, but how do I still maintain my happiness and make sure that, you know, I'm still bringing my baby up in some way, form, or fashion that I would have envisioned in my mind. But then at the same time, trying to still be tolerant to say, this isn't a permanent situation. It's temporary. It's not going to, you know, last for a life. And then there was other things. It was, I'm rather OCD about how things are done in the house. So things like the kitchen, let's not do that this way. We differed on that. I think those are natural kind of dynamics in setting kind of boundaries of what conversations, and this was really more towards my husband and not necessarily really geared towards my mother-in-law, where my husband's very open and I'm more like, whatever we need to talk about, we need to talk about in our close quarters. So at the very beginning, you know, my husband would just talk like, and, you know, like, or talk about our bills or talk about, you know, like, and his mom is right there. And I'm like, wait, what?
Hold up now.
Wait till we get to the bedroom. Like, and then, so it was like, now, you know, she's checking the mail. And I was just like, that's a little awkward. Like, you know, but then again, I get it. It's a form of, I want to be able to help you, but I've grown up in American society. So I'm like, why are you checking my mail? That's my private information. Yeah. But it's not like she's going to open the mail or and even if she did, it's like, okay, you wouldn't understand. But again, it was just kind of like that mental, almost for myself, of like, okay, I need to figure out a way to politely say, hey, you really don't need to check the mail, or hey, babe, we really don't need to have a conversation about what we're buying for groceries in the house. Like, that's what we're gonna talk about. That doesn't need to be a community discussion. Like, and so those were kind of the things that would happen in the beginning. And I think eventually it did cause a little bit of roadblocks in the center, but yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like, because it was under the guise of this being temporary, she's here to help with the baby, and then it morphed into a permanent situation, it sounds like you all didn't really get the opportunity to talk about boundaries or expectations in terms of house rules. So looking back, are there any discussions you wish you would have had up front that you feel comfortable with sharing?
Definitely. I think I would have been a lot more vocal about the things that I wanted. And I think had I done that, it would have been a lot easier to have other conversations. Just even simple things like, you know, how you want things done with the baby. Like, it's okay. Like, I think the second time around, when I had my second child, it was like, okay, girl, you grow some wings and say something. If you don't like it, speak up, but still be kind. But, you know, I said something. I didn't, you know, because at the end of the day, you're doing yourself an injustice and you're also doing the other party an injustice, because it's like either you're going to have some built up resentment or you have inner frustrations because you're just kind of like burying all these emotions. And then, you know, you're not saying how you actually feel. And that's not fair to either parties. And so I think, yeah, definitely I would tell my older or younger self, like, be vocal about what you do or don't like. And especially when it comes down to setting boundaries, regardless of whether it's a temporary situation or it's a permanent situation. I think with anyone, you should, because essentially you would do the same with your friends, or you would do the same with, you know, a child, or you would do the same thing with your spouse. You would let them know, hey, what, you know, this is going on. I don't like it or not. So I think I probably would tell myself that I should get over that discomfort of, because it's, you know, an elder, or the fact that it's someone in the position of being my mother-in-law, who potentially I think, let me backtrack, because it was so fresh and we were getting to know each other, there's a lot of also I want to please you and I want to make myself likable, I guess, mm-hmm. to a sense. And I, for me, because I grew up here and because my mother-in-law was coming from back home, we'll say that. And I think a lot of people probably will, or have the assumption that, oh, you grew up here, you have no idea about your culture, you have no idea about your language or anything like that. And, you know, my parents are, you know, very African, and they always would tell us growing up, like, just because you're in America, just know that when you're growing up, it's Africa here at home. And so I grew up with that. And I guess maybe I went into it with a point to prove that I can show you that, yeah, like, I know how to be African too. Like, but it's like, I understand the language, I understand our ways. Like, and so a lot of that, with that point to prove, I buried some of my own ways and my own value, well, not necessarily values, but just kind of like my own likes or dislikes. I buried that because I wanted to prove a point, or I wanted to appear to be not necessarily someone that I'm not, but I wanted to appear to be what that person may have in my head envisioned for their son to marry, if that makes if that makes sense. That, you know, despite the American accent, girl, I can still cook. it was just kind of like those things. And I remember one day me, like, you know, wearing like a rapa and everything, like, at home, trying to, you know, show my mother-in-law, like, you know, I'm not saying, you know, I just bought that girl. I'm like, I can be a village girl, but it's like, it's not, at the end of the day, she probably wasn't looking for that, but it was just kind of like me trying to prove to her that, you know. And at the end of the day, I'm sure I made impressions that were false to her, and that would set the tone for different things. And so then when I actually, you know, start, you know, may get frustrated down the line with certain things, it's like, oh, well, where's that coming from? Yeah. Now you're to some extent. So yeah, I feel like that's a really long.
No, That's really good, because I was going to ask how like her presence affected how you like ran the household. So you talked about like, you know, like with cooking and how you were around the house, but when the kids came, do you think you were doing a little bit of that with the kids? And if so, how? Or do you think by then you had transformed, or I don't want to say transformed, but you were like more comfortable with just who you were and like showing her that?
I would say kids are always different. And it's always going to be different when you have a grandparent. Regardless of it being mother-in-law, it's different when you have a grandparent and you have parents living in the house. And I can say this now, being so many years in, and coming from a more reflective place. So my kids are a little bit older. Not that I'm an expert at parenting, or I'm an expert at, you know, having to live with a mother. No, I'm still learning. It's every day is a journey. But when I look back on it, probably some of the things that I would have, you know, sweated with the first child, like, no, I'm going to put my foot down. Like, you know, I'm the mom, you know, or feeling threatened that your child wants to, because at this point now, once my, you know, mother-in-law became a permanent presence, it was like, well, why pay for daycare? Like, like, you're just gonna, you know, baby's gonna be at home with you. So my son literally was at home for 2 years with my mother-in-law. And so there, and I think for me then there was some jealousy aspects of, okay, I'm going to work. I really wish that I could be with my son. And then on top of that, he's spending so much time with someone. Regardless of who it is, whether it's my parents or it's my mother-in-law, they have a lot of influence on your child. If you send them to daycare, they have a lot of influence on your child. And so as a new parent in that situation, it's more like, okay, when I come home, it's time to de-brainwash you and we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Like, you know, don't you love mommy? You love mommy, right? Like these, like these really weird insecurities that, you know, I may have, you know, of course, I'm sure that, you know, my mother-in-law is not out there, like, you know, trying to be a favorite, but it's a baby. They're naturally going to be attracted to whoever they spend the majority of their time with. And then on top of that, of course, you know, that might be a little bit hurtful. Like, oh, my child doesn't want to spend time with me, but it's not intentional. So I think that was one thing that kind of, you know, bothered me. And I had to kind of cross that bridge of, all right, it's not me. It's not her. It's just that we really need to, you know, set some form of understanding on top of that. And then even when you're leaving your child in the care of a grandparent, or grandparents going to spoil the child, and as you're the parent, you're probably like, no, my child is two, they need to like know numbers 1 through 10 and ABC because they're starting pre-K. Like, that was my mindset. But you know, my mother-in-law is like, no, let's watch Steve Harvey. And you know, coming home from work and your baby's, you know, able to say the whole like Steve Harvey show song. And I'm like, what? So that was a part of boundaries. So we have to talk about that. Like, grandma, no, that's not okay. Making sure that those things are kind of clear. And then I would say the second time around, I probably went really hard, because I took all of those things of, you know, oh, my mother-in-law had the opportunity to, you know, give my, you know, my first child their bath for so many months because I couldn't. My mother-in-law had the opportunity to kind of set the tone for how they ate, what, you know, they, she was there for 2 years with, you know, my first child. Life would have it that, you know, God presented it that I would be able to come home and be with my second child. So now it was like, okay, game time. Like, all right, I'm gonna be present, and I'm gonna, you know, be the better parent. It's not a competition, but in my mind, you know, I'm just like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, be the better parent. And I think that was just because it's like when there's two conflicting, and it's not that it's two conflicting parenting sources on purpose.
Yeah.
It's just that a grandparent's naturally going to want to, oh, let me give you a hug. Oh, if you want a yogurt and it's your fifth yogurt, of course I'm going to say yes. But you as the mom, you're going to be like, no, you can't have it. And so it's kind of setting that standard or that fine line between how do we come together where the kids know that they can't come to you because you're going to say yes to every single thing, because naturally grandparents are going to just say yes to every single thing. And then how do I not look like the bad guy?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I still have to be mom and say, no, you can't have yogurt. This is your fifth yogurt. Like, yeah. You know, things like that. So I would say those are the differences between having, you know, that live-in presence, and especially sometimes you kind of have that third eye on you
mm-hmm.
all the time. And I think that's tough, where for me now that my kids are getting older, I do want to have those intimate in the moment conversations yeah. with my kids to either redirect behaviors or give positive recognition. I don't necessarily want a third party present for every single one of those conversations, but there is mm-hmm. a third party present, and so because there is a third party present, it can kind of create some sense of lack of intimacy that you might have within your parenting, because there's someone watching, or you know, it's natural a grandparent's going to interject like, oh, please don't shout at him too much, or please don't spank her, you know. And it's just kind of like, well, let me be the parent. Let me parent my child yeah. without the constant, you know, feedback mm-hmm. in on yeah. how to do things. So those are all the things that like you're constantly navigating with having that in-law or grandparent or
yeah.
that additional person living in the home with you. Like that, it's rough. Yeah.
Yeah. Having that third party there definitely affects the dynamic of the parenting, as well as just like how you probably relate with your spouse as well, always having the third party there. But I wanted to ask a question, and you let me know if you feel comfortable with answering this or not. But I guess, did you have any thought, you know, once she was living with you, about how your husband's relationship with, I guess, his mother would impact what you could build with her?
Here's the thing. So in all honesty, there's a lot. There's a lot when you think about emotions. There's a lot when you think about, because for our situation, things were not clearly communicated. Like it wasn't like this whole Dr. Phil sit down moment where we say, hey, this is happening. This is the plan. This is the end goal, and this is what we would expect from it. In my mind, that's how I function. That was what I was expecting. I didn't get that. So that affected me because of those same dynamics. I think it also affected my husband, because it's like, you can't just go to your parent and say, hey, this is the situation. What is the expectation? And what's the, like, you realistically, you can't do that. As much as, you know, and I think, okay, fine. Culturally, no, we can't do that. Maybe in other worlds we can. But I feel like we can't do that. That's my opinion. So prior to all of this, I would say that they had a great relationship. Because of the lack of communication that did happen, it put, you know, strain on me, only because I look for clear communication in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't necessarily get that. And I will say I do take more ownership. And I say this, I think a woman sets the tone for her home. A woman's interaction, just like your question is kind of, I know that it's not leading, but it is kind of leading. A woman's interaction with family, even on her side, and in-laws, sets the tone for how the entire family functions. I didn't necessarily have that understanding, I would say, 5 years ago. I have that understanding now. And so when I started to realize that some of the things that, you know, I may hone in on or may irritate me, because your spouse is also in a very peculiar situation. They want to make you happy. They want to make their parent happy, yeah, right? Yeah. And so you kind of have to be sensitive to that as well, to realize, all right, if I'm constantly complaining about something that's constantly bothering me, because your spouse has taken this vow that it's till death do us part, at least I know for my spouse, he took that to heart. And that was kind of a big thing for him. And so some of that subliminally came out with changing some of the dynamics with his parent. But then when I caught on to that, it's like, okay, I don't want to be responsible for a parent and child dynamic or situation being changed because of the result of my own angst or the result of my own, you know, small irritations or things like that.
Yeah,
because I do believe that I do set the tone in my home. And so it spirals down. It spirals down to your kids. It spirals down to how my family may treat my in-laws, or it's a big thing. And so understanding that power, that how deep that connection is, I had to kind of, you know, understand that, all right, if it's something that you can have a direct conversation with yourself, then I should do that without involving my spouse as a middle person, because it's not fair. Essentially, that's making, you know, your spouse the middleman or the middle woman, or however you want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it puts them in a disadvantaged position, because they here's two people that they love dearly, that they want to make very happy. And it's unfair to constantly live in an environment where there might be some form of like angst, or it's not fun for any person to live in an environment where there's angst. Not to say that, you know, we were living in some walking time bomb, or it's not like world or anything like that, but you just kind of think about small things, like instead of saying to your husband, oh, why'd your mom do this? Or why'd your mom do that? Or like stuff like that. It's just kind of like, no, like, go have that conversation, like with the person that you actually, again, being direct about how you feel, go have that conversation politely with that person, instead of now taking it to your spouse, who probably is going to carry it a lot more, with a lot more weight than it's intended to. And then on top of that, it may now be delivered, because it's like the telephone game, it will be delivered in a different manner. And it's like everybody else is, well, you know, she might think, oh, well, why didn't she just come to me and say it? Or, you know, by time it's delivered, it's like, well, is my son upset with me? Like, you know, and so it just creates like this weird dynamic. So I think, yes, I really had to learn that it's not everything that irritates you that you need to complain about to your spouse. And if it's something that is so delicate of a situation that you think, okay, let's we've had some family conversations, and it's been the three of us where we just kind of, you know, let's get this out in the open, let's talk about it. But then again, it's all three parties so that everybody can hear what each person, but that came with, again, learning time over time, you know, that it's a different dynamic. Again,
I was gonna say, you just gave up some really like solid marriage advice too. I feel like when you started talking about, you know, I have to be sensitive to what he's feeling, I'm like, you better teach the girls. Okay, that's 8 years of marriage.
No, 8 years is small.
But no, that was really good, I think, advice, you know, just like free game that you've given. The last question that we would just like to know is, what has been the most positive thing about living with your mother-in-law? And are there any qualities in her that you've observed that you would want to emulate?
Yes. So the most positive thing, it might sound selfish, but we are able to have date nights, like literally all the time. I can't complain. Like, you know, there's, you know, she is great at, you know, being available to, you know, be hands-on with the kids. And that's a gift in itself. A lot of, you know, especially being here in America, where you feel like a lot of people don't necessarily have family close by. We're I feel like we're privileged in the fact that we do have, you know, mother or my mother-in-law living with us, and then we've got, you know, my parents close by. I feel like we're privileged in that case. But again, I feel like the bulk of it most times is like, oh, we have somewhere to go. It's kind of like, okay, we don't really have to think twice. We know that, you know, my mother-in-law is available, you know, like she really ain't got nowhere to go. It's just like, the kid's going to be with you. So I would say that is a plus. And so I do appreciate that. I probably, you know, now that I'm saying it, I probably should thank her a lot more. for that, and not take it for granted, because sometimes, yes, it can be easy to just take it for granted. I would say the things that I would emulate, personality types, they're, and this is kind of, I would say three bullet points for it. I don't know, I'm a bullet point person. the three bullet points is age difference. Yes, a lot of people kind of like harp on, oh, we're, you know, like she's in a, you know, the baby boomer generation, and I'm out here in a millennial. That has to be so hard being in the house together. But I think in some respects, there's a lot to gain from that in those two differences. It puts a lot into perspective, especially in this day and age where you see a lot of younger couples, a lot of younger women. I think I'm just more of an old soul anyway. But I do see some of the things that, you know, I can relate on, where, you know, she's kind of like, you tend to, and I feel like a lot of women from that age, you tend to put a lot of things on the back burner for the sake of your family, for the sake of your children. But it's not necessary. And I think there's a healthy boundary to it. I'm not saying go deprive yourself of your whole entire identity for the sake of your home. But I would say that's one thing that I would take, is that there I've seen a lot, or I've learned of a lot of the sacrifices that she's made. And I see it as a plus for her kids. And one, I get a great husband because of it. Yeah. So that's a plus. Two, I am a black or white type person. Everything, like, it has to make sense in my head. And if it doesn't make sense, like, I just can't rationalize it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, she's just kind of more easygoing, and it's just kind of like her, one of her favorite responses is just kind of like, oh, there's always another day. Whereas, you know, for me, I'm like, no, it needs to happen now. There is no other day. Like, I would say that, yeah, I've taken a little bit, not perfect again. I've taken a little bit of that mentality of, you know what, it is what it is. There's another day. Like, it's not, don't sweat the small stuff. Especially now, as I, you know, kind of like think back and look back at, you know, kind of like the early years, and then, you know, we're nowhere close to the end of our marriage journey or our home journey. And then, you know, God forbid, you know, be at the end of, you know, her journey. But just kind of like thinking about like some of the things that I probably would have allowed to beat me up inside or irritate me, it's just kind of like, don't sweat the small stuff. It's kind of like, is it hurting anybody? Is it killing anybody? If it's not, are you going to think about it 5 years from now? And is it going to like make or break your day? Then no, then leave it alone. And then the last one I would say is just kind of her ability to forgive, because we're all not perfect. I'm not perfect. My husband's not perfect. She's not perfect. But because when you take three different personalities, you take three different age ranges, all living within a same, you know, in close proximity with one another, it's a different case to know someone from a different, from a distance, but it's a different case when you start to live with one another. So her ability to sometimes, I have not had pretty moments, but, you know, I think there's sometimes that I've gone to apologize her and her literal response has been, "It's okay. God bless you." And I'm just like, what?
And not a petty God bless you, like she really means it.
She really means it. And it's just like, wait, hey. Like, go check my Bible. But no, just really her ability to just kind of, you know, really, I would say, be gracious. Like, I know sometimes, you know, not to say that there hasn't been some faults, you know, but at the same time, it's just kind of her ability to just kind of look at, you know, any of, you know, any of the conflicts that may have occurred, you know, along the line, and just kind of be like, it's okay. Well, she's very, very quick to say, "I'm sorry. That wasn't my intent. I didn't mean it." And I really do appreciate that, because I know that I can be one to be like, "I need to rationalize this. We need to talk about this," you know, and before we get to the forgiveness phase, like we need to, we need to have a full on dialogue before we get to that step. But no, forgiveness and, you know, being graceful is just step one for her. And then everything else follows afterwards. So, and I would say,
nice.
Those are the three things that I would get from her for it. So, yeah.
Wow, that apology is everything.
Yes. It is apologizing and she's forgiving. Come on.
Yes.
Oh man. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode of the Girlfriends and Goals podcast. Make sure you follow us on Instagram at Girlfriends and Goals podcast, where we'll continue this conversation. If you haven't subscribed already, please go ahead and do that now. Don't forget to rate, review, and share. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.